Totally Football Show. Today, Euro qualifiers. As England in Prague swallows some bitter pills, we round up the group orders. Who's tops? Who's chasers? Who's had a bitter round? Who's enjoying good spirits? Who's on the Lambrini? And who's no longer seeing 2020? Also, other things like the return of Ranieri and a big flip reverse in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. Among the voices in your head today, we've got Matt Davies-Adams.
Morning, James.
Hi, Matt, from Chelsea TV. That's right, listener, and the Totally Football League show this week. Helming that, I think, Matt, is that right?
Certainly am.
It's a big show as well this week, isn't it? Michael Cox is in, from the Athletics Tactics headquarters kind of
Yeah,
thing.
That's true. Thanks,
workshop,
James.
Right. And also visitor to the Athletic this week. No, Shorten Athletic.
Yes, very good.
Right. Yeah. Tom Williams is here from ESPN and book writing about funny foreign football sayings.
That's me. Hello, yeah. James.
Yeah. We had actually the wonderful A Slice of Cheese in a recent show, and I'm not sure why, but the mention of your book was excised from that anecdote. If you'd just like to mention it now.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, do you speak football? A glossary of football words and phrases from around the world on sale.
Brilliant.
Currently.
All right. And it contains the background to Slice of Cheese.
I had a couple of people get in touch just to ask about Slice of Cheese and its etymology and how I'd come across it. And, you know, was the footage still available on YouTube? It's all still out there.
Right. Okay. Excellent. Michael, you a fan of the Libertines?
Yeah.
Okay.
Back in the day, I guess.
Are you excited to know that the seat that you're sat on was occupying the bottom of Carl Barrett?
Yes.
Only a few days ago. Did you know this? Did Ben tell you this?
Nick told me, and it was slightly amusing because he said, guess who's coming in next week?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I guess a couple of footballers. And then he said, no, Carl Barrett. And because I thought he was talking about a footballer, I thought he was talking about Earl Barrett, who used to play right back for Aston Villa.
When you said Carl Barrett, I thought of Earl Barrett as well.
Please, I'm not the only one.
Oh, the Aston Villa fullback. No, the Libertine singer. Oh.
Yeah. I was a fan back in the day.
Why was he sat in that chair? I'll tell you. Oh, look, we were recording a special. We weren't, but the Money News Media did a special podcast for National Album Day in which he talks about his career and, oddly enough, Fleetwood Mac's Rumours. Although, to be fair, if you're talking about an album, it's not that odd to be talking about Rumours. Pretty much start there, I would suggest, Matt. But that's a topic for our National Album Day podcast, which you can hear on nationalalbumday.co.uk or other places like Spotify and Audioboom. Great. Okay. Football, meantime, Tom. We best get on with that. Loads to talk about today. Want to hear about Shorten Athletic against Kingstonian, and I know you want to tell us, Michael. And, of course, there was a lot of WSL action, which you guys were at, the big Chelsea-Arsenal match and that, and all those qualifiers. But let's begin with the latest on the race for Euro 2020.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Italy became the first of the co-hosts to qualify after their 2-0 win over Greece. They'll be playing in the opening match in Rome on the 12th of June. Also booking their place, Belgium, who won 8-8, Poland and Russia. Portugal or Andriy Shevchenko's Ukraine could join those teams tonight, depending on what happens when they meet in Kiev. Also this evening, France and Turkey, currently tied for top spot in Group H, will be facing each other at the Stade de France. And Spain will be up against Sweden, needing just a point away to qualify. As for the home nations in Ireland, or Mick McCarthy's Republic, had a 0-0 at Georgia. Northern Ireland were 1-0 up to the Dutch going into the final minutes and still lost 3-1. Scotland had a Russian crushing 4-0 but saved their peak performance for football mountaintop San Marino. And England went to Bohemia and lost their first qualifying game in a decade. And that's where we begin.
Moses down, this is Mazepus. And here is Andriy Shevchenko, and he scores!
England 1, Czech Republic 2. Well, first off, the Czechs looked a bit better than last time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they were made to look pretty good by a hopeless-looking England team, but certainly they gave a good account of themselves.
It started well for England. Harry Kane with the penalty. And then what happened?
They didn't have any more shots on target for a start. I mean, the England team is so top-heavy, it's ridiculous. That front three of Sterling, Kane and Jadon Sancho, the envy of most countries in Europe, I'm sure, but they hardly had a kick of the ball because behind them, Rice and Henderson didn't particularly work. Very few successful forward passes from them. And then this very, very odd back four that Gareth Southgate picked, that I would say three of the four of them were extremely lucky to get in there based on the way they've been playing this season. And, yeah, conceded a poor goal from a corner and didn't defend well all night and deserved to lose the match.
Set-piece issues continue. This from Matt Davis-Adams on Twitter. Defending corners is so last season. Someone check if Marlo Stanfield had an English grandparent. You later correct yourself, though.
Yeah, quite, because Marlo obviously was better at taking corners than defending them. Right. So it's more of a Bodie season 1-2 defence that was required.
Very nice. Duncan Alexander also active on social media. The Czechs. Kafka is unsettling, inexplicable. England will bench Trent forever. Czechs, OK, you win. What do you think is going on there with... why would Gareth go with that back line that everybody's so perplexed by?
I don't really understand. You know, Trent Alexander-Arnold's going to be England's right-back for the next 15 years, theoretically. Michael Keane's in dreadful form for Everton. Harry Maguire's not having a great time at Man United. You've got Joe Gomez on the bench, who, in the absence of John Stones, is probably England's most complete centre-back, I'd say. And actually, probably even in the presence of John Stones, that holds true. And then Danny Rose getting in the team ahead of Ben Chilwell. So, yeah, I'm slightly puzzled by the makeup of the defence. And there are suggestions that that Southgate might now switch to a back three against Bulgaria. But I'm not sure that's the solution. England have looked quite good in a 4-3-3. Think about that fantastic win that they got in Spain in the Nations League a year ago, which was England's best competitive result in absolute, you know, ages. That was with the 4-3-3. The front three works. I think the goalkeeper's all right for now. I think it's personnel rather than tactics that are England's issue currently.
Okay. I mean, England will qualify anyway, barring something truly calamitous. But the consensus does seem to be that there's a kind of inversion of quality. Michael, how worried should England fans be, and what do you think the problem is?
Well, this was funny. I saw the reaction to this game before I actually watched the game. I watched it on Saturday, and I didn't think it was quite as bad as some people said. I mean, we did create 2 1-on-1s in the second half for Kane and Sterling. Usually they'd put away one of those. That was at 1-1, and England would go on to win the game. But I do agree there's some issues in personnel. I mean, I agree with what the guys have said about the defence. I think also the combination of Henderson and Rice is pretty pedestrian, isn't it? You know, you've got Harry Winks on the bench, who I don't think is a complete player, but is very good on the ball, is very good positionally. And I just think England needs someone in that midfield who can pass the ball, basically. I think the defence will get solved. I mean, the defence has looked pretty good in previous games, and I think Southgate probably was just rotating, and certainly in the fullback positions. But yeah, midfield is the for me, is the major issue. Right. I've never been particularly convinced by Rice. I think he's an all right player. I've never seen anything that makes him look better than a kind of mid-table player at this age.
And the fact that you've had a series of results that, even if Friday wasn't as bad as some might think, have been pretty negative results. Kosovo, Holland in the Nations League. It does seem like that early enthusiasm around Southgate is rather evaporating.
Gareth Southgate managed Middlesbrough for 150 games in England, under-21s for 33. It's not like he's a vastly experienced coach, so it's not surprising that he's quite limited in you know, his knowledge of how to get a team to perform. He has lots of pluses in the way that he set the team up initially, but he is, to all intents and purposes, a rookie manager, so he's going to make mistakes like this. I'm not sure that there's anybody at the moment who screams out, oh, he'd be a much better England manager than Gareth Southgate is. So that's the way it's going to be, unfortunately.
All right. Well, sorry, Tom.
Yeah, well, I mean, one thing you would say is it's not a bad time to have this sort of setback. England will qualify inevitably, so qualification is not in jeopardy, and they've now got time to sort out these problems. Much better to have this sort of result and this sort of performance now, months out from the tournament, than in one of the games immediately prior to the tournament, when you've already committed to whatever approach you're going to take, and then you have to go back to the drawing board. So, I mean, it's a good test for Southgate, you know, because this, okay, and he tweaked the system a bit, and he was playing players who, you know, who perhaps he wanted to have a look at, you know, rather than players who were sort of nailed on starters. But it's a chance for him to try and come up with something different.
All right.
By the way, James, the last qualification loss for England was that game, as you say, 10 years ago against Ukraine, which I think you were one of the only people to actually watch.
That was the game 10 years ago. Mm. Brilliant.
I wrote the stat pack for that game.
Did you, man?
I did, yeah. I was writing Ukrainian phonetics for David Pleat, which kind of felt like weighing in the wind a little bit.
Right.
But, yeah.
Michael, I mean, you're exaggerating when you say I was the only person to watch it, because Sven saw it as well.
Yeah.
When he wasn't looking at his phone, he did, yeah.
Yeah. Were you there then at Askew Road that
day? Yes, yes.
Brilliant. So this was a bold new experiment by the FA in selling the rights to that England game to... Was it Setanta?
It was Perform who broadcast
it. It was put out on the internet.
Yeah.
So it was the first time an England game had ever gone out on the internet. Just on the internet.
And screened in Odeon cinemas, as I recall.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Well, they certainly got a lot of bang for their buck. I can't remember much about the game. Much of my attention was taken up by Sven and his phone, to be fair. He was a singular guest, and not nearly as affable as he proved to our friend Jonathan Norcroft in a terrific piece that Jonathan's just done, Chez Sven, away in Sweden. But anyway, yeah, great knowledge, Michael.
And England had already qualified, hadn't they? So,
well, yeah, it was a dead rubber.
You can probably say it's our first loss for longer than that, I would say.
Well, technically, no.
Technically, no, but, you know.
Friday was the real quiz.
All right.
Yeah, exactly.
In that game, Rob Green became the first England goalkeeper to ever be sent off.
Is that right?
Yeah, replaced by David James, who came on for Aaron Lennon.
Wow. You'd like to think I could remember some of this happening. Sven took his shoes off. Do you remember this, Matt?
I don't remember that. I remember he insisted on getting a limo to and from.
Right.
And he got like 25 grand or something ridiculous for it as well, didn't he?
We all did, to be fair.
Yeah. You might have. Yeah. That wasn't even my yearly salary at that point, I don't think.
No, happy memories. happy memories. Anyway, by the time you hear this, listener, England may well have kicked off against Bulgaria. And if they win that match and Kosovo fail to beat Montenegro, England will have put their place in the pan-continental football experience that is Euro 2020. All right, with that in mind, let's turn our thoughts to some of the other regionally local footballing nations. I think that's probably a nice neutral way to describe them. Northern Ireland, for a start, who are now 3 points behind Netherlands and Germany. They went to Rotterdam to take on the Dutch, held out resolutely for over an hour, took the lead even against the run of play in the 75th minute, and with 10 minutes late were 1-0 up, which would have been a huge result for them. Tom, how did it finish?
Finished 3-1 to the Netherlands. A couple of goals for Memphis Depay, who is very much Ronald Koeman's talisman, and another goal for Luke de Jong. And yeah, a sickener for Northern Ireland, who made such an impressive start to that group. And we always knew that you know, they were going to be up against it going into their last run of games. They are at home to the Netherlands in their next game, and then they finish away at Germany. So if they could have got anything out of that trip to Holland,
right,
you know, even if it was just a point, that would have been something. But it doesn't look great for them in terms of automatic qualification.
No, they're 3 points behind the Dutch and the Germans. The Dutch will qualify with a draw in Northern Ireland in their next game.
Ronald Koeman didn't particularly enjoy Northern Ireland's approach to the game, describing it as outrageous and terrible to watch.
I wonder what he would have made of a group featuring Scotland, who of course got done 4-0 by Russia, but then bounced back with a massive and convincing 6-0 win over San Marino and an extraordinary downpour actually at Hampden. John McGinn with a hat trick.
We've got a Scotland hat trick stat.
Okay.
If anyone's interested, yeah, between 1970 and 2014. No Scotland players scored any hat-tricks. And since 2014, there have been three.
What does it mean, Tom?
That Scotland have been very, very bad for a long time. And
Is that a green shoot? Are you seeing a glimmer of recovery there?
I'm not sure I'd go that far. I think John McGinn is a green shoot in himself.
Right.
You know, we've seen for Villa already this season, he's made that transition from Championship to Premier League pretty seamlessly. And it's not that Scotland don't have good players. Mm. They just don't have enough of them.
So Stephen Fletcher got one, didn't he? I seem to recall. Do we know who the other one was?
Do the hat tricks. Yeah. Stephen Fletcher, Griffiths. Did he get one?
I feel like
he might. Lee Griffiths.
This is turning into a quiz.
We
might have a proper quiz a little bit later on, depending on how we go. Would you like that, Michael?
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
Brilliant. All right. Well, we'll try and fit in a quiz, Liz, and stick around while we discuss Wales. Tom, two must-win fixtures: Slovakia and then home to Croatia. 2-1-1 draws. Where does that leave you and Ryan?
Well, in actual fact, they weren't really must-win fixtures.
Were they not?
Because...
Oh, the playoff.
No, not the playoff even. So Wales's current situation is that with two games to play, they will qualify automatically if they win away to Azerbaijan and at home to Hungary, and Croatia don't lose against Slovakia in their next game. So on sort of form, Wales should be capable of doing that. Croatia, because of this draw in Cardiff last night, they now need to avoid defeat in that game against Slovakia to rubber stamp their qualification.
Right.
So Wales should be able to rely on them to do them a favour. And then if Wales can't win away to Azerbaijan and at home to Hungary, they probably don't deserve to qualify anyway.
Azerbaijan, you'll be without Joe Allen.
We'll be without Joe Allen, who is, you know, a key figure in sort of setting the tempo at the base of midfield, as he has been for the last few years. But I mean, two quite encouraging performances.
Okay.
You know, away against Slovakia, Ryan Giggs gambled by picking Kiefer Moore, the Wigan Athletic striker. He got the goal, his first international goal, with a really nice header from a Daniel James cross. Slovakia came back into it and equalised, but with Wales having already beaten Slovakia, that's quite a useful point, because it means that Wales can now afford to finish level on points with Slovakia, because they'll still be ahead of them on head-to-head. And then this draw against Croatia last night, Croatia taking the lead early on through Nikola Vlasic, and then Bale equalising on the stroke of half-time, means that Wales only needs Croatia to get a draw against Slovakia, whereas without that result, they would have needed Croatia to beat Slovakia. So, yeah, positive signs. A very physical game. Like, surprisingly for modern football, a lot of big, shuddering challenges. Daniel James got laid out by Domagoj Vida.
Did he, though?
He did. I mean, he did. I mean, we don't know whether he got sparked out, but he got, like, he was, you know, sort of.
Well, it's a really curious scene. So he's down for what, 2.5, 3 minutes?
Yeah, yeah.
And the way that he initially goes down, his kind of head lolls to one side like he's completely out. And then afterwards, he says, no, I was just employing, or I think his manager describes it as a bit of gamesmanship.
I wonder if that's maybe covering the medical staff to an extent, in that he shouldn't have carried on in the game. Ethan Ampadu went off in the second half with suspected concussion. And I thought it was bizarre that James was allowed to carry on in the match, given what looked like a pretty severe injury.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was just...
Yeah, it wasn't like he was rolling around in classic acting up fashion. He looked absolutely out for the count, as you say.
Yeah, I mean, we can't know whether he was unconscious. I mean, obviously, he didn't look in a great way, but you can't know for sure. And I suppose, the suspicion is that whatever happened, Wales's medical staff may be covering their own backs by saying, well, he wasn't, that's why he went back on. But it's always dangerous to sort of try and judge these things from a distance, because we don't know what sort of state he was in.
Although, whilst we now accept a certain amount of rolling around in terms of trying to accentuate a foul, does it not sound really dangerous to suggest that a manager was happy with his player pretending to be concussed, pretending to need that kind of medical attention?
I've not seen those quotes.
Well, Ryan Giggs says that essentially he was just being a bit clever.
Right, okay. I mean, a curious time to be clever, 5 minutes after you've gone 1-0 down in a vital qualifier. But yeah, I mean, you know, the positive thing is that Daniel James was able to play on, didn't seem to be, you know, unduly affected, didn't, you know... at least, again, watching from the distance that we watched at. But so qualification still in the balance. Wales without Joe Allen for the trip to Azerbaijan, which is unfortunate. But, I've seen in these last two games signs of improvement under Ryan Giggs, who obviously has not been flavour of the month with the Wales fans pretty much from the get-go. But, you know, Wales are in a decent position now to go on and qualify. They should qualify, really, looking at the way the group stands. I guess we'll see how they get on in the next two games.
All right then, Tom. After this, other lands, other football. Spain got held by Norway in a match which featured Sergio Ramos winning his 168th cap. He's now the most capped European outfield player of all time. That's extraordinary. Other people chasing all-time highs, Cristiano Ronaldo is now up to 699 goals, Tom.
There was a stat on Twitter that I retweeted that he's now scored as many goals in his career as Kenny Dalglish and Dennis Law combined.
Wow.
Obviously, very different eras and different numbers of games and all the rest of it. It's still pretty crazy to think that, you know, Dalglish and Law are what, sort of top 30 all-time strikers, probably, I'd say. And Ronaldo has scored as many goals as both of them put together and is still going. And probably is going to overtake Ali Daei, I think. He's on 94 international goals, I believe, and Ali Daei's on 109.
Right.
So Ronaldo's hunting him down. And to be honest, Ali Daei's done well to hang on to that for as long as he has.
Yeah, I looked up Ali Daei's goal-scoring stats, I must say, ahead of this podcast, and can exclusively reveal that he scored 8 against the Maldives, 8 against Laos, 6 against Lebanon, 5 against Sri Lanka, 5 against Nepal.
Right.
It's not quite comparing like with like.
There's a big asterisk alongside those figures. That's the thing. Asian World Cup qualifiers are the place if you like goals, and a further testament to that came just this weekend, actually, is that Iran game against who were they playing? Were they allowed?
Cambodia.
It was Cambodia, and it finished 14-0 to Iran in front of, for the first time in 40 years, a full contingent, or at least a sizable contingent, of female fans. In fact, producer Ben reveals that in the 16 games in the Asian World Cup qualifying this time around, there were 84 goals. That's quite a lot. Anyway, elsewhere in the world, France had a 1-0 win over Iceland with Steve Mandanda in goal. How did that work out?
Worked out well in the sense that he had very little to do. It was a ground-out victory, courtesy of a 66th-minute Olivier Giroud penalty. And that means that if France beats Turkey this evening, Monday, they will qualify for Euro 2020. Still no Ugo Lloris. Mandanda is still in goal. No Conte, no Pogba, no Mbappe.
Right, Conte.
So slightly weakened. Yeah, so he felt a muscular twinge in the warm-up in Reykjavik and was replaced. So we await news on his fitness.
Right.
It's a real concern for Chelsea that he's not been able to get going this season at all. And obviously, he's a key player, but also Mateo Kovacic went off injured last night for Croatia. Andreas Christensen.
Ben Davis.
Yeah.
Up to the Wales goal.
Ethan Ampadu as well, though obviously he's not at Chelsea at the moment. Andreas Christensen injured for Denmark as well. So it's not been a great international fortnight for Frank Lampard, despite his pint with Prince William on Friday night.
I missed that. He had a pint with Prince William.
They went into a pub somewhere in London as part of an FA initiative on mental health and getting men to talk to each other.
I heard they were there till 4 in the morning. Jaeger bombs just flying around. Got pretty wild.
Wow. Did anyone see Xhaka and Lichtsteiner's free kick routine?
Yes.
What did I miss, Tom?
So it was one of those where two players are standing over the ball and one of them feints to take the free kick and runs over it, and then the other one does, and then the first one runs back, and it looked like Lichtsteiner had done a dummy run and then Xhaka did a dummy run and then circled back round and had intended to play the ball to Lichtsteiner, but he was then marked. So yeah, it was a bit of a mess.
Right. Oh, I tell you what wasn't a mess. Zaha and Pepe combining for Ivory Coast's second goal.
They didn't combine. Pepe just taps it in. Zaha did all the work.
He backheels it in.
Yeah, okay. He backheels it in.
It was a sublime finish to a wonderful build-up. It was the kind of thing that if he'd missed it, you thought, oh, he's ruined what would have been a brilliant goal, but he didn't. He gave it the finish it deserved.
Yes, but the talk of combination, which is what it has been described of, seems a bit unfair on Zaha. He basically beats six players and then tees up Pepe to put it in from on the goal line.
Yeah, he dances through the DR Congo resistance and then Pepe, as I say, does a little kind of mini Zola at the end. Very nice. Good. Well, there you go. That's international football. Anything we've missed in that pretty comprehensive roundup?
I did think it was slightly ludicrous that Sporting said they would be prepared to rename their stadium after Cristiano Ronaldo, given that he played 30 games for them and scored 5 goals, and the stadium's named after the person who founded the club.
Right.
Seems a bit of a stretch.
That does seem surprising, doesn't it?
His last game for Sporting was at the inauguration of the stadium.
That game against Synergy.
Game against Manchester United, where he was so good that Manchester United were like, we're going to have to sign him.
Right. Incredible.
But United only went over there because they wanted a big name opponent for the first game.
Mm. Well, one other thing, actually, internationally, we might mention, and it touches on that whole injury thing, is that Neymar, in the course of another disappointing performance from Brazil, has picked up yet another disappointing injury.
The third time that he's been injured on Brazil duty in the last 12 months, and the second injury was the ankle injury that kept him out of the Copa America. So playing Nigeria in Singapore on what was apparently a fairly ropey pitch in front of a pretty thin crowd, and it seems, I don't know, it quite anachronistic that in 2019 Brazil are still travelling around the world playing friendlies in front of empty stadiums in the way that they've been doing since the 1950s.
Right.
And yeah, you can imagine that at PSG they'll be pretty miffed that Neymar's picked up another injury. I mean, apparently the initial scan suggested it was a fairly minor hamstring tear, so he doesn't look like he'll be out for all that long. But it probably means he's going to miss his Champions League return, which was due to take place against Club Brugge. And yeah, by all accounts, not a vintage Brazil display.
No, 48 matches he's missed in the last 2 seasons so far, and Brazil's money-chasing antics continue. They'll be screening matches on internet-only platforms soon, the way they're going.
I'm Jose Mourinho. I know a thing or two about being special. Nearly dying in a laundry basket? Special. Winning the daily jackpot on Paddy Power games? Not special.
Understood, Jose. Yes, someone wins an average £40,000 jackpot every single day. So if you win, don't think you're special. Daily jackpots by Paddy Power Games. Jackpots must be awarded by 11 p.m. and vary from day to day. Jackpot is shared with other operators. Available on selected games. T's and C's at paddypower.com. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
on Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere. This is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Hey, listen, I don't know what you were getting up to while all that was going on, but we've had Nick Miller come in with a laptop and quiz questions. Nick, thank you so much.
That's quite all right.
What have you knocked up for us?
Some quiz questions,
yes.
James.
Yeah.
There are a number of categories.
How's it going to work?
So I'm going to ask the questions. The panel in the studio are going to write their answers down, and then later on...
Right, and you at home as well, listener.
You play along.
Grab a pen and paper.
And then later on in the podcast, we'll come back with the answers.
All right, so what is it? Kind of is it themed rounds? What do we do?
Sure, yes. There are. So we've got a round on career paths, or a limited career paths, and then... something on quotes, and then there's some bonus rounds later on if we've got time.
Yeah, we've got time.
It's international week, Nick.
Oh, yeah.
Time's what we've got. All right, well, fire away then. Are you ready, listener? Okay, let's go with round one.
So round one is career paths. I'm going to give you the first three clubs for three current Premier League players. You've got to identify the player. First one, Sporting, Porto and Monaco. Name the current Premier League player. Next one, Manchester City, Notts County and Leeds United.
Man City, Notts County and Leeds.
And the third one, Vélez Sarsfield, Porto and Valencia. Who is the current Premier League footballer whose first three clubs were they?
Wow, those are three tough questions, Nick. Sporting, Porto, Monaco, Man City, Notts County, Leeds, and Vélez Sarsfield, Porto again, and Valencia. How are you guys faring with those?
Not well.
No?
Yeah.
Not struggling?
Not so good.
Michael let out an excited yelp at one point.
I think I got two.
Two of them. All right, that's the bar, listener. Can you beat that? Well, anyway, while we're pondering on that, here comes round two.
Okay, so these are quotes. I'd like you to identify the person that these quotes were referring to, or the person who's talking to.
Right.
So not the person who said them, but who they were referring to.
Okay.
So the first one is, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you? Good lad.
Interesting.
So who's referring to?
Who was the good lad in question?
Yes.
Right.
Second one. When I was a 14-year-old, I used to get to those first team games early so I could watch him warm up. He was so graceful. Everything he did was so classy. I couldn't wait to watch him play. Then when I met him man-to-man, it was, oh my God, what a... I can't believe this.
Right. Is it Michael Owen?
No.
Okay.
I can see why you'd think that.
Right, here's a third one, listener.
Third one. You'll probably recognise the quote. I'm not convinced that he won't play. The Italians are innovators of the smokescreen. When they tell me it's pasta, I still check under the sauce to make sure.
Right. Well, we all know who said that.
We're looking
but
for...
who's he talking about? Who's which injury?
Who's the he?
Right, interesting. So there you go. Good lad. What a... And the pasta quote. Wow. All right. I'm perplexed, listener. You may be too. Well, don't worry, because that at least we'll have answers to later on in the show, Nick. And maybe a special bonus round too.
Who knows?
For now, let's press ahead with a quick word on the WSL, the Alternative Football Universe, where they've actually just come back from their international break and Man United win games. Back-to-back victories. In fact, they did Liverpool, now Spurs. This weekend, the match which dominated a lot of people's attention was Chelsea-Arsenal at King's Meadow. And Michael, you went along to that.
I did, yes.
How was it?
Really, really good game. Excellent.
All right. A win for Chelsea, 2-1, in what had been seen as a big test of their... title credentials, and a sizeable crowd as well. You were one of over 4,000 people there.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It's a good ground when it's got that level of crowd in, and just a good atmosphere as well. But I thought the game was exceptional, just great intensity throughout. You know, some excellent players on show, really good technical quality. I guess a classic game of two halves. Arsenal went 1-0 up quite early and dominated the rest of the first half. No real sign that Chelsea were coming into things. And then after half-time, it completely flipped, and Chelsea... got fairly early equaliser through Beth England, and then just had constant pressure really for the rest of the game, and eventually got a winner through, you might have to help me out here, Maria Thonsdottir?
Thorisdottir.
There we go.
Very yeah. Nice.
Such a significant win for Chelsea, this. You can't really understate it. It's a year ago today, Monday, that Arsenal won 5-0 at King's Meadow against Chelsea, and that... essentially ruined Chelsea's season. They went on a terrible run after that. They'd been all right at the start of the season without being exceptional. So this is really, really important for them. And it ended Arsenal's 100% start to the season too.
Right, leaves you second in the table, 2 points behind Man City.
Yeah, four games gone. Chelsea second, 2 points behind City. They beat Birmingham convincingly on Saturday. Chelsea a point ahead of Arsenal, who are in third. And as you say, Man United fourth. Pretty impressive, given it's their first season in the top flight.
Mm.
There was a really interesting battle between Leah Williamson and Beth England, who are two of the big winners of the England international break. And that's centre back against centre forward. And I thought it was really interesting because they're just completely different profiles of players. Williamson's, you know, not a conventional centre back. It's quite slight. He's brilliant on the ball, excellent positionally, really good at intercepting. Maybe not the best in a physical sense. And England just looks like terrifying to play against. So it was a really interesting battle where Williamson was excellent first half, spreading the play really well. And then Chelsea were just able to almost just knock hopeful balls into the channels and just lob balls for kind of headers like the header she scored for England last week. And it was just, yeah, a fantastic kind of individual duel. But it was a really good atmosphere. It's, you know, I'm used to going to King's Meadow when Kingstonian were there and there's kind of 300 people. But when there's 4,000 and, you know, you've got an away section, but you've also got some Arsenal fans mixed in with the Chelsea fans. It's a really good atmosphere.
Which game did you enjoy more this weekend? Like, was it that one or Kingstonian away at Cashorten Athletic?
That was 2-2. To be fair, they were both good games. The Kingstonian game featured the Cashorten right back winning an aerial header, heading it up in the air, and then when the ball came down, he won the second header, but also headed that straight up in the air.
Right.
And when the ball came down, won the third header.
Right.
And that's the kind of thing you want on non-league day.
Absolutely. There was a Brazilian player, Foca, who was... that means seal in Portuguese.
Curlon,
yeah. Good knowledge, Tom.
The seal dribble.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Still playing. I think he's in Serbia these days, or he's Slovakia.
Right.
Or last spotted in Eastern Europe somewhere.
What happened meantime to the Cashorten defender the third time the ball came down?
Yeah, this was very much not dribbling. This was heading the ball 20 yards up in the air twice in a row and being first to the second and third ball.
Brilliant. Love it. Okay. Right. A valuable point for Kingstonian in a difficult season in the Isthmian League Premier Division, am I right?
Yeah, a little bit, but got a cup run and that's the main thing.
Excellent. Very good. Listener, there'll be more discussion of the WSL weekend in the Offside Rules WSL edition, which probably is with you now. If you've subscribed to that, why not join the subscribers if you haven't already? It is, of course, free. Quick mention of our live shows. As you may know, we're going to be in Dublin on Friday, the 8th of November. The following day, Boris's border checks permitting, we will be in Belfast Saturday the 9th. And then we head to Liverpool on Monday, November the 25th. And Michael, you're part of that extraordinary romp across the the island of Ireland. Jules and Duncan will be along for those shows as well. And then it's Jules and Duncan with Raphael Honigstein in Liverpool. All the information anyway, you can find at thetotallyfootballshow.com/events. You can also find loads of new editions of Golazzo there, excitingly enough. Four new episodes are with you. All the old ones are still available, of course, and there's one of them on the great Claudio Ranieri, which is very topical because he is back. I can't think many people won't have seen Sampdoria's tweet reading "Dilly ding, dilly dong" and not reacted with a smile at the kindly hearted Premier League winning genius's return to management. He's taken over at Sampdoria, who in a little bit of a Fulham bis and in a little bit of a repeat scenario from his last gig as a gaffer, they are bottom of the table with an absolutely abject defensive record. They decided to get rid of Eusebio Di Francesco and brought him in. They lost six of the first seven. Curiously enough, he did take over from Di Francesco at Roma last season and did pretty well. Good end to the season. But yeah, he's got to sort that defence out. As I say, it's all quite reminiscent of Craven Cottage. But fingers crossed.
He'll be gone in 6 months, won't he?
Who, Ranieri?
Yeah.
I bet he'll steady the ship.
Yeah, yeah.
This is his 20th club, I think, isn't it?
20th appointment, 17 different clubs plus Greece. He did Roma and Valencia twice.
Leon are looking for a new manager, Tom, and it's not going to be Jose Mourinho.
It's not going to be Jose Mourinho. So they are seeking to replace Silvinho, former Arsenal and Barcelona favourite, who...
What triggered that? Because he'd been a little bit... unconvincing so far, no?
Yeah, well, they... So, basically, Lyon have undergone some quite significant changes over the summer. Juninho Pernambucano, their greatest ever player, returned to the club as sporting director, and he was allowed to appoint his own coach, and he picked Silvinho, who was working as an assistant to the Brazilian national team. Didn't have any experience as a number one manager, but he was Juninho's man. And he came in, they made a good start to the season, actually a really good start to the season, beat Monaco 3-0, thrashed Angers 6-0, and then things went wrong. And basically, Lyon are quite an attacking team. Savinha tried to make them a slightly more defensive team. Never managed to get the best out of the players at his disposal. It was very difficult to see what it was that he was trying to achieve. They had a good opening result in the Champions League, won 2-0 away at RB Leipzig, then lost the derby to Saint-Étienne, which is never a good move for a Lyon coach. Savinha was promptly sacked, and Lyon were left without a coach.
Right.
Jean-Michel Aulas sent a text message to Jose Mourinho to see if he would be interested. And Jose said
no.
So
how do we know about that? Because it felt like Jose had announced himself, I've been offered the Lyon job, but I'm
not
going to take it.
No, it was Jean-Michel Aulas himself,
right,
who was generally quite happy to, you know, to talk about what he's up to. He said that he'd contacted Mourinho. Mourinho had said, thanks, but no, I'm about to join another club.
Really? What club do you think that is then?
Who knows?
If he really wanted him, would he not have rung him up rather than text him?
Seems a bit casual, actually. Fair point.
I think he's just about to join the Paddy Power Rewards Club. Isn't he?
No, but I'm curious. So if he genuinely... Or was that just him saying, I've got a better offer?
I wonder whether it was him fobbing Aulas off and hoping that Aulas wouldn't then make that public.
Right.
So it's not going to be Jose Mourinho. They drew up a shortlist of three candidates. Laurent Blanc. He's been out of work for 3 years now.
Yeah.
Rudy Garcia, sacked by Marseille at the end of last season, and Jocelyn Gourvennec, the former Guingamp and Bordeaux coach. And it looks like it's going to be Rudy Garcia.
Really?
Laurent Blanc was the favourite, but always works with a big set of coaches. And Lyon have got a very well-structured coaching setup. So they were looking for someone to come in, maybe with one assistant, but no more. And it looks like that has been the final sticking point. As of this morning, Garcia is in Lyon negotiating the terms of his contract. I mean, the Lyon fans were hoping for Blanc because he is the man who won the title with Bordeaux, who won the title with PSG, whose teams generally play very good football and who is a great figure of French football and French sport. Rudy Garcia, obviously, is a very successful, very accomplished coach, but having left Marseille, who were basically their second biggest rivals after Saint-Étienne last season, does have a bit of a black mark against him. And things really unravelled quite quickly for Garcia at Marseille. So not the most popular appointment, but it looks like he is going to get the gig.
I was hoping that Silvinho would come back and manage Arsenal because I was interested how he would spell his name.
Please elaborate.
Because when he was at Arsenal, he spelt it with an I,
right?
S-I-L. And since, or when he went back to Spain, it became a Y.
Right.
So presumably he'd stick with the Y if he came to Arsenal. It'd be weird if we knew him as Silvinho with an I, for him then to manage Arsenal, Silvinho with a Y.
Yep. Entirely worth wrecking Arsenal's season to posit that whole scenario.
I agree.
Maybe he could keep both spellings. And they'd be slightly different versions of him. And you'd never know. One was sort of like fiery and aggressive and one was a bit more relaxed. And you weren't ever sure which one you were getting.
Just occurs to me that maybe Jose Mourinho's next job is the Sunderland one, because that one's still that position is still available. Isn't that right, Matt?
It certainly is, yeah. Gareth Ainsworth was apparently in talks after his come-and-get-me plea to Lincoln, which you might have heard on the Totally Football League show a couple of weeks ago, which was quite extraordinary. But yeah, Sunderland, Reading, Barnsley, Southend, Orient, Millwall, all still looking for new managers, although by the time you listed this, Henrik Larsson might be the Southend manager.
Really?
With Dirk Kuyt as his number two.
No way.
Yeah, which is quite extraordinary. They lost 4-1 at home to Wimbledon on Saturday. They're 5 points from safety, so he's not going into an easy job. I'm thinking he probably doesn't have a massive knowledge of League One either, but we'll have more of that on the Totally Football League show on Wednesday. And we'll be talking about Forest Green as well. I don't know if you've been keeping up with their owner, Dale Vince, who is a big backer of Extinction Rebellion and is part of a committee trying to stop a no-deal Brexit. He said last week that if Forest Green were contributing to climate change, then they should go bust. They would deserve to go bust.
Right.
Forest Green got an award for being the first carbon-neutral football club as recognised by the United Nations last year. So they are a very interesting case study and we'll be having a look at them.
Brilliant.
Green by name.
Exactly.
Green by nature. That would be fascinating to see Henrik Larsson at Roots Hall. And Jose Mourinho anywhere in League One, League Two, I think would be just magnificent, and a real response to those who say that, you know, effectively he just kind of swans around at the top clubs and then calls himself special.
Well, Ligue 1, League One, is there that much of a difference?
Oh, steady on.
Now, there'll be more Henrik Larsson very, very shortly as we flip the switch on our flip reverse it machine. And we'll be getting the answers to those fiendish Nick Miller quiz questions. Yay. First, though, here comes producer Ben.
Thank you very much, Jimbo. Hello, listeners. Lee Price is on the line from Paddy Power in Lee. Quite a few teams have already qualified for the Euros this summer, so take us through the favourites for the overall winners.
Well, you'd think a couple of damaging performances for England would lessen their rise in our betting, but it hasn't. The Three Lions remain second favourites at 9-2, behind only France, of course, the world champions, who are 7-2. Next, you've got Belgium, who are so good they've even got Christian Benteke scoring. And they're ahead of Germany, Spain, Holland, Portugal and Italy, in that order. An excellent run of teams, all of whom, you could argue, look like excellent value when compared to England.
As we were saying, it was another really poor performance from Gareth Southgate's team in Prague. So tell us, what are the markets looking like for his final 23-man squad?
Yeah, our traders have saved Gareth Southgate hours of agonising because they've picked the England team and they've priced up who will and who won't make it. Here are the headline surprises from our traders, at least. Michael Keane and Kieran Trippier won't make it, we think, but Joe Gomez and Kyle Walker in defence will. We make James Maddison 1-5 to make the squad, therefore one of the most secure players in the whole team. But Fabian Delph, a mainstay under Southgate, doesn't make our cut, nor does Eric Dyer. Jesse Lingard, very divisive for many people, is 8-11, odds on to make the squad. Whereas up front, no surprises here, 1-25, Raheem Sterling and Harry Kane both make it.
And finally, we're all quite excited that Claudio Ranieri is back in football. Can he keep Sampdoria up, though?
Well, despite them being rock bottom, we think Samp will be fine. We are odds on they'll stay up, in fact, at 3-10, or it's 2-1 they get relegated, with our betting suggesting they'll finish 16th in Serie A. In terms of who will go down, well, we don't think it'll be second bottom Genoa either. They're an even longer 6-1 to go down. Instead, it's third bottom Lecce who are favourites to go down, while Spal, who are currently 17th, are also odds on to get relegated. As for the final spot, our tip, 10th place Verona. Bold.
You can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Listener, to help you through these final days of International Week, our friends at Beer 52 want to give you a free case of craft beer. Super easy. All you have to do is head to beer52.com/football. Now, typically, Beer 52 put just 8 beers in these cases, but they love Totally listeners so much, they're going to chuck in an extra 2. So that's 10 beers for free, and all you pay is £4.95 for next day's shipping. Beer 52 are beer pioneers, working with small batch breweries from all over the world to bring you hoppy IPAs, hazy pale ales, and eclectic lagers from Italy, the Czech Republic, Korea, California, and everywhere in between. There's no minimum commitment with Beer 52. You just take the free case, try the beers, and see what you think. If it's not for you, you can pause or cancel your subscription at any time. So head to beer52.com/football and claim your free case of craft beer right now. That's beer52.com. 52.com/football. All right, let's tinker with the timeline again with a bit of flip reversing. Mike, you're not a fan of flip reversing.
No, a waste of everyone's time.
Really? But surely it just underlines the arbitrary nature of what we consider football history, how it all pivots on sometimes the most trivial of events.
The only thing I'm interested here is it's Arsenal and Barcelona.
Right.
I want to find out how Silvinho's name changes according to these events.
There you go. Well, for that and more, let's go back, Tom, to the year 2006. Crazy by Gnarls Barkley has been number one, like, forever. Ashley Cole has been swerving in his Mercedes. Spurs have been having some bad lasagna. And Arsenal have a Champions League final. A Champions League final, Tom, against Barcelona with Ronaldinho, Eto'o, Juli, and crucially, Henrik Larsson. Now, Tom, as it turned out, Larsson comes on. Jens Lehmann's been sent off. Sol Campbell gives Arsenal the lead, but then it's the arrival of Larsson that turns the game around, and Barcelona win it 2-1 and go on to dominate football effectively, and Arsenal fade and almost disappear from the top table of European football. I'm slightly oversimplifying, but that's largely what happened to these two teams that felt at the time almost equivalent. What would have happened if Jens Lehmann hadn't picked up that red card?
Well, here's my hypothesis. I don't think all that much would have changed for Arsenal beyond them becoming the first London club to win the Champions League, because generally when a manager wins a major competition, it just convinces him that he's on the right path and needs to continue down that path. But Wenger thought that anyway, and losing the Champions League final didn't change the way that he went about his job, so why would winning it? So I imagine that Arsenal would probably have carried on roughly a similar trajectory. But the implications for Barcelona, on the other hand, are seismic for the history of world football. Namely because Frank Rijkaard stays in the job. Of course he does. He's reached the Champions League final. Barcelona have won the league at a canter. But we know there are underlying issues there at Barcelona, which in real life culminate in him losing his job a couple of years later and being replaced by Pep Guardiola. In this flip-reverse alternative reality, all of those factors are accelerated. He can't point to the Champions League trophy to sort of save him. So he ends up losing his job sooner than in actual fact. Maybe in 2007, maybe during the 07 and 08 season. But the bottom line is, at this point, Pep Guardiola is nowhere. Okay, he's at Barcelona in charge of the B team. If the sacking takes place during the course of that season, he doesn't yet look ready for anything beyond that. So when Barcelona are casting around for a mantra of playing Frank Rijkaard, who do they go to?
No.
Who else but Jose Mourinho, who in reality was the man vying with Guardiola for the job.
Wow, Barcelona go to the dark side.
Go to the dark side. Come 2007, Chelsea have lost the league title to a resurgent Manchester United, and in reality, Mourinho loses his job early in the 2007-08 season. Perhaps with Rijkaard having got the boot at Barcelona, Mourinho gets brought in earlier.
They send him a text.
They send him a text message, which, as we know, is his preferred means of communication, and he takes on the job. So what happens to Barcelona? Well, he inherits this fantastic squad that's got a few bad eggs and needs sorting out, and he turns them into the best team in Europe.
Right.
Because
tracking back,
etc. Obviously, he's going to use Xavi, he's going to use Iniesta, he's going to use Lionel Messi. But without Guardiola's genius behind the scenes, tiki-taka doesn't ever really happen. I mean, OK, Spain, I think, go on and win Euro 2008.
But where would Guardiola then surface, do you think? Because presumably he would surface. Would he just wait for Mourinho to be fired after the third season?
I imagine so.
Right.
So maybe at some point in the future, Guardiola does become Barcelona coach. Right. And then maybe he does turn them into the team that he did actually turn them into in reality.
Right.
But yeah, so basically no tiki-taka revolution, or at least not when it actually happened. Lionel Messi becomes the best player in the world because obviously he's Lionel Messi, but not freed by Guardiola to play in this super destructive false nine role.
Right.
He spends a lot of time tracking back on the right flank,
right,
covering the opposition left back. So he becomes a sort of 30 to 40 goal a season player,
right,
and he's obviously the best player in the world, but no more. And on the international front, without that Barcelona influence on the Spain team,
right,
they don't win the 2010 World Cup. Germany win it. And the sort of the Germany peak era arrives a little sooner because there aren't any other dominant international teams at that time.
Okay. Wow, that's extraordinary, isn't it? Ashley Cole, does he stay then or does he still move to Chelsea?
I suspect he probably still moves to Chelsea because it's like, well, what else am I going to achieve at Arsenal? I've won I've done the invincible season.
And
I've won the European Cup.
They've offended him with that contract.
Well, grossly offended him.
Right.
So, yeah. I think Arsenal would just carry on Arsenaling in the way that they actually did.
And the biggest question of all, how does Silvinho spell his name in Tom's dimension?
He actually changes his name to a symbol and becomes referred to as the left-back formerly known as Silvinho.
Genius. Wow, that's remarkable, isn't it? Michael, did you enjoy that?
Yeah, my perceptions of flip-reverse it have entirely shifted. Thank you. Thank you for that.
You've flip-reversed Michael's feelings.
Who'd have thunk it?
Brilliant. Excellent. Well, listener, do you know what? I think that all that remains for us in this edition of the Totally Football Show is to reveal the answers to Nasty Nick Miller's mind-numbing quiz. Let's get Nick's coming in now. Nick, welcome back.
Hello, James.
Hello to you. They were really difficult questions. If you could read out them out again, we'll see who's got them right and who hasn't.
So the first round was career paths. This is the first three clubs of three current Premier League players. So the first one was Sporting, Porto and Monaco.
All right, anyone get that? Tom?
I think That's João Moutinho.
It is João Moutinho. Ding, 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 ding. All right, 1 point for Tom. Did you? Anyone else get that right? João Moutinho.
Okay, Michael also got that right. So 1 point for Michael as well. Question two. Whose career path went Man City, Notts County, Leeds? Anybody get that?
Kasper Schmeichel.
It was Kasper Schmeichel.
Oh, crikey.
Correct. Well done.
That's very clever. Anybody else get that?
Michael is so aloof to this. He's just showing me his papers. Not even.
Michael's also on, even he's talking. On. He's on 2 points now. The early leader. You are as well, listener, aren't you? Okay, third question.
Vélez Sarsfield, Porto and Valencia. And I could see from Michael's paper that he had got that right, so...
Damn, who is it, Michael?
Otamendi.
It is Nicolas Otamendi, oh, yes.
Tom got that as well, so Tom's that. On 2 points.
So how are we doing? Matt?
Just one for me.
One.
Two for me.
Tom, three for Michael.
And I'm on a perfect score as well. I'm perfect score being zero. Okay, round two, listener, are you ready?
So these were quotes, and we're looking for the person... who this quote was referring to or talking to.
Mm-hmm.
I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you? Good lad.
It was Brian Clough about Dom Revy.
It was.
Always worth pointing out that Dom Revy was the England manager at the time. He was called a good lad by Brian Clough.
Several times in that interview.
So that puts you on 2 points, Matt, is that
certainly
right?
Certainly does, yeah.
2 points.
I knew it was Clough, but I couldn't think I went Billy Bremner, but obviously it was from the famous ITV... confrontation.
Right. Michael, did you get that?
I knew it was Klopp. I went for Motson.
So close.
Okay then.
So the next one. When I was a 14-year-old, I used to go to those first team games early for watching him warm up. He was so graceful. Everything he did was so classy. I couldn't wait to watch him play. Then when I met him man to man, it was, oh my God, what a I can't believe this. Tom has got his hand up.
That was Teddy Sheringham from his autobiography, I believe, on Glenn Hoddle.
That is correct.
Yes. Brilliant, Tom. You're on 2 points as well now.
3 points.
Oh, you're on three, tied with... Oh, Michael's got it as well.
Michael got it as well.
Right.
Congratulations.
I put Ibrahimovic.
Oh, fair. I mean...
Yeah, you can see why.
All right, and the final one, listener.
Final one. This was Alex Ferguson's famous quote about when... The Italians tell me it's pasta. Yeah. I still check into the source to make sure. Yeah. Who was he talking about?
Okay, I believe that this is the only one I've got right. Was it Del Piero?
It wasn't Del Piero.
Del Piero as well, James.
Yeah, Michael did as well.
I put Del Piero. Well.
Tom?
It was obviously a Juventus player. Was it Zidane?
It wasn't a Juventus player, no. It was in the lead-up to their quarterfinal against Inter in 1999.
Ronaldo.
It was Ronaldo.
Ah.
Not that Ronaldo. That Ronaldo.
That Ronaldo.
Nick, that was so difficult.
So,
what were the scores then? At the end of that?
I think we all know who's won. But
surprise!
All right, Michael Cox. How many points you get?
I've got four.
Four out of six. You
three
boys.
Three out of six.
Two.
Well, and that's all we got time.
I reckon. I reckon there's a good chance a listener has got six.
Yeah.
Listener?
Can we trust them? Though?
Knowledgeable.
Yeah,
listener.
Yeah, be honest. They're our listener.
We trust the honesty of our listeners. That you can hear is the sound of Michael Cox. Contemptibly screwing up his answers.
Right. He's crushing the paper like he just did that quiz. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, Nick, that's brilliant. If you'd like more quizzes, listener, do let us know or just get in touch. Send Nick a text and he can take us out of the hole.
You're going to give everyone my number.
Yeah. Number will follow put that shortly.
Okay. We'll be back on Thursday to round up the rest of the international break and, of course, look forward to the return of the Premier League. Jack Lang will be here, Daniel Story as well, and Duncan Alexander. Oh, I'd like to see him have a go at your quiz.
I wouldn't.
Really?
Yeah, that's too intimidating.
Scary. Yeah. Very good. All right, that's it, though, for today's show. Many thanks to Matt, to Nick, to Tom, and to Michael, and you, listener. Have a great week until we catch up with you again on Thursday.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.